give a Okay, I'll start there again. On the 6th of May, 2011, almost a year since the city of Johannesburg was successful in declaring some of the chapters in the DSA unconstitutional and invalid, the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform published for comment a proposed bill called the Spatial Planning and Land Use Management Bill, and comments had to be submitted on or before the 6th of June, 2011. This bill has been long overdue, and the work and effort that has been put in by the National Department since the Concord judgment is really commendable. Thank you for the opportunity to have participated in this process, and we acknowledge that the present draft is a distinct improvement on previous drafts. However, certain areas of concern do remain, which we hope to summarize in the time allocated to us. Apparently, 112 sets of comments were received by the National Department on the first draft of the bill, and as a result, a workshop was held with the National Department where everybody was given an opportunity to address the department, focusing on the main issues raised in the respective comments. At the workshop, it became clear that there were many universal concerns which were raised mainly by the metropolitan municipalities. And these were the interrelationship between the different spheres of government, as the bill proposes that there be a spatial development framework on national, regional, provincial, and local level, and that an application that affects a national or provincial interest or falls within a national or provincial functional area, as per Schedules 4 and 5 of the Constitution, be forwarded to the relevant minister for approval. Then the composition of the proposed municipal planning tribunal, and the proposed appeal authority who has the right to appeal, and the proposed transitional arrangements. And then unfortunately at subsequent discussions or meetings, it became clear that many of these universal issues of concern still remain and have not yet been addressed in subsequent drafts of the bill. The City of Johannesburg therefore has to raise these issues again today as areas of main concern that we feel must be addressed before the bill is enacted into law. I'm going to hand over to our legal advisor of the department, Alvain. His presentation will be quite brief.
Thanks, Chair. Our first area of concern is the different levels of planning. The compilation of SDFs on all levels of government has still not been adequately clarified, bearing in mind that the bill proposes that there be SDFs on a national, provincial, regional, and local levels. We're concerned that there might be many conflicts between these different levels of spatial development frameworks and how these conflicts will be resolved. Bearing in mind what the bill proposes, the content of these SDFs, the legal effect of these SDFs, which is proposed in the bill itself. Our second area of concern is the compilation of the tribunals. The bill is very prescriptive on how these municipal planning tribunals must be constituted. And we are very much concerned that the bill makes it mandatory that outside representation or outside people be appointed to be permanent members of these tribunals. We're a bit against that, and we believe that it should be left up to the municipalities themselves to decide how they want to constitute these committees in accordance with their own needs, their own circumstances, and budget. For example, what worked for the City of Joburg might not necessarily work for the City of Cape Town. We've had discussions with the City of Cape Town before. They would like to have members of council on these committees and not officials. For Joburg, it's the other way around. We believe that if you want to have outside representation on these tribunals, it must be made discretionary and not mandatory. Then, bearing in mind that we haven't seen a set of regulations yet, we say it's commendable that the bill accepts that a municipality must be the decision maker of first instance. However, the prescribed timeframes, which will be in the regulations, within which to make these decisions must be reasonable and practical to allow local authorities to apply their minds properly and to negotiate, for example, engineering solutions, and not to create, an opportunity for developers to escalate matters to provincial and to national level. The definition of what is national and provincial interest, monitoring, assistance, and support. Which application constitute what is of national interest and or provincial interest has not been adequately quickly clarified in our opinion. More detailed guidelines need to be provided so that we don't find ourselves in the very same DFA situation again. The bill also makes provision for support, assistance and monitoring from national and provincial level downwards to municipalities, but without clarity on when and how this would be achieved, without impeding on a municipality's executive authority to do municipal planning. The internal appeal authority and the delegations is quite a serious concern for us. The bill proposes under Section 51 that the internal appeal authority be the municipality's executive authority. Now, for the city of Joburg, that would mean the executive mayor, assisted obviously by the mayoral committee. Bearing in mind the number of development applications the city of Joburg consider on an annual basis, it would be highly impractical to overburden a mayoral committee agenda with development appeals. I'm sitting here with MMC Freef. She will tell you that some of these agendas, a mayoral committee meeting can last from 9 o'clock in the morning until 11 o'clock at night. And you can just imagine if you also include into that agenda development appeals. Section 56 makes provision for delegation. It's one thing to say, okay, the appeal authority should be the mayoral committee, but then give that mayoral committee at least a delegation maybe to sub-delegate that power to somebody else. But the way that the delegations read at this stage, it says that certain powers may be delegated by, for example, a municipality to an official in employ of the state. That doesn't make sense at all at this stage. Then we've got some concerns with the transitional arrangements proposed in the bill, specifically Section 62 and Subsection 3, which proposes that a tribunal established under the DFA may continue to operate and finalize applications as if those provisions have not been repealed. Now, we've obtained a legal opinion, and that opinion suggests that this is not correct in law because of the fact that the Constitutional Court has declared those provisions unconstitutional, and such order of invalidity became operational on 18 June 2012. So it's not possible for this Act to breathe life into provisions that's been declared unconstitutional and invalid. The bill should rather propose that those applications be finalized under the bill itself, or there should be reference in the bill to where the DFA refers to a Gauteng Development Tribunal, that it refers to a municipality. The practical implementation of the bill is also difficult to assess at this stage because, as I've said, there's no set of regulations yet. Then the bill also prescribes in Schedule 1 matters which needs to be addressed in provincial legislation, and we believe this needs very careful assessment, bearing in mind Section 146 of the Constitution, which states that framework legislation, such as this bill will be framework legislation, will always prevail over provincial legislation when there's a conflict. Just to highlight an example, for a township establishment process and the accompanied provision of engineering services and engineering contributions have not adequately been addressed in this bill, and we don't know whether more detail will come in the regulations. But if it's not adequately addressed in the framework legislation, it cannot be adequately addressed in provincial legislation. Schedule 1 to us is very important because each and every province is going to promulgate their own provincial legislation in terms of which most development applications will be assessed. So Schedule 1 is important. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you once again for allowing us to make a submission to the City of Johannesburg. We have submitted detailed comments that also address definitions as well as each chapter in the bill, which should be read in conjunction with this presentation. We wish to wish you well in your endeavor to produce an acceptable piece of legislation that will address spatial planning and land use management for the country. Thank you.
Thank you. We now call upon the City of Tshwane.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Dikulinda Roo. I'm from the City of Tshwane. I'll be assisted by Molly van der Vijver from our City Planning Department. We would like to start off by saying thank you and for the opportunity to provide input on the content of the bill. This presentation will be limited to key issues, not as a substitution of our detailed comments, and obviously the detailed comments will have to be taken into account as well. Just to give a little bit of context insofar as the impact of this bill is concerned with regard to the City of Tshwane, we are the biggest local authority geographically in the Southern Hemisphere, and the impact on economic development locally within the province and nationally is vast in terms of the City of Tshwane. We have a lot of national international investments, the car manufacturing industry, Toyota, Nestle, those are the industries that are investing within the City of Tshwane. And we are in a position to support development and create job opportunities. In turn, this will generate infrastructure, housing, etc., all those constitutional objectives that we need to reach as a local authority. This particular regulatory system needs to support this investment, promote community development and participation aimed at service delivery. We need to give acknowledge the need for national legislation on land use management, and we obviously regard this as the framework legislation within which the provincial legislation will be dealt with, as well as your day-to-day operations within local government. When we look at this particular set of legislation, it doesn't operate within a vacuum because of the fact that it's been tested constitutionally the way in which municipal planning should be done. And these are the principles that we would like this bill to adhere to. As we said, the City of Johannesburg Metropolitan Municipality brought a constitutional court application, and therefore there's a judgment against which we can test this particular set of legislation. The judgment had two options. A new legislation could be drafted or the DFA could be amended. There was an it was elected that new draft legislation must be drafted, and therefore you can now test this legislation against the constitutional principles. Just to go through these principles, because in the context of our comments, you will note that we've tested this against each and every principle that came out of this judgment. The one is that municipal planning is exclusive competence of local government. Policies within the local authority are to be honoured and adhered to. There was a particular part of the judgment which says that if you have parallel systems of land use management, it will be a recipe for chaos. It was clear that interference by provinces into the day-to-day operations of local government relating to planning, budgetary infrastructure services cannot be tolerated. And then obviously the invalidity of Chapter 5 and 6 of the DFA, which cannot be resuscitated through this particular legislation. The focus on the constitutional judgment was not the dealing with applications or land use applications, but the principle of power of decision making. Therefore, we start with the key issues, and a lot of this will be a repetition of what Joburg presented, but obviously we will just pass them and just reconfirm our concerns as well. Insofar as the consultation process leading up to this particular version of the bill, we are concerned about the lack of feedback with regard to our comments. Comprehensive comments were given in terms of the previous versions, but there was no rationale around what was not included in the bill and what was actually included in the bill, and I think that is a little bit of a concern to the City of Tshwane. Obviously, the transitional arrangement is a big concern. The fact that the bill in terms of Section 60 is trying to resuscitate Chapter 5 and 6 of the DFA in that it states that the application shall be concluded in terms of the DFA, although those chapters do not legally exist any longer. There were proposals made to the department with regard to dealing with the transitional arrangements. For example, we said that if the DFA is supposed to continue, the reference to the Gauteng Development Tribunal could be referenced to a local government institution in as far as our province is concerned. But that does not seem to have been accepted within the bill. Then we have a concern regarding Schedule 1, which stipulates what the provincial legislation will be all about. There are provisions that are so wide that actually allows for interference within municipal planning. We've quoted the clauses that are of particular concern to us, and we believe that the framework legislation should not only put the clauses there that are required, but should also limit powers so that it does not interfere within the local government sphere. Then there's a lot of matters that are being legislated in terms of the Spatial Planning and Land Use Management Bill, which is covered by other legislation. And this is where we share the concern with the City of Joburg. For instance, the establishment of a municipal tribunal. The Municipal Systems and Structures Act already provide for the institutional arrangements for local government. Not only does it provide for these institutional arrangements, it also gives the necessary flexibility. It provides that councillors can be on this decision-making body. It provides for external representation. It provides for delegations. So there doesn't seem to be a need to reiterate this in this particular legislation. All that's going to happen, it's going to create conflicts that are unnecessary. Similarly, the spatial development frameworks for local government, this is already covered by the Municipal Systems Act. And you will see that the spatial development frameworks that are required in terms of this bill and that in terms of the MSA differ in terms of content. Therefore, you're going to have conflicts about which one will take precedence, the MSA spatial development framework process, or would it be the bill process? Then the matter of that the Constitutional Court actually made part of their judgment in the fact that the decision makers are supposed to honour spatial development frameworks within the local authority. This does not come through in this bill. The only thing the bill says is that the spatial development frameworks have to be considered, and then there's an out clause to say in cases where it's illogical or there's an unintended result, they don't have to adhere to the spatial development frameworks. Now, in a litigious community, that's going to mean that that's all we're going to do. We're going to argue about what is an unintended result and what is illogical. So those type of expressions within the bill is just cannot be acceptable in terms of having a proper regulatory system in place. Insofar as the conflict of these documents are going to be concerned, there are other processes like your Intergovernmental Relations Framework Act that deals with if there are conflict between local government levels. We do not believe that the bill is adding to making this an easier or proper process in order to deal with conflicts on SDFs and how they are supposed to be adhered to and how decision-making is being done. Then the other thing is the current legislative frameworks within which planning decisions are being taken creates a maze of principle, guidelines, policies, all of which decision-making authorities have to comply with. It is with anticipation that local authorities awaited the rationalization of these policies, principles, and guidelines. And at first blush, it appears that it is the intention of the bill to try and simplify and implement uniform policies and principles and guidelines. However, if you start looking at the norms and standards, the new provisions for SDFs within local government, the fact that the MSA already governs these things, we seem to be going further into this maze of all of these things that local authorities have to adhere to, and there's no clear and crisp process that is outlined in the bill. Then there are, compared to the May 2012 version, the new version that was published, there's one provision that is really of concern, and that's section 26.4. 26.4 says that regardless of any other provision in terms of any other law, you can actually use this bill, which will obviously be an act after enacted, to deal with planning applications. Now, this, the Supreme Court of Appeal said that you can't have two parallel processes. You have to say where provincial legislation is not in place, you can use the bill, because we do understand that some provinces may not have legislation in place, in which case you can use this particular act, but you can't have both. You can't have provincial legislation and national legislation, and then the developers end up cherry-picking which legislation they're going to use, even though the decision will still be taken by the local authority. So that is a concern, and it's going to be the same, exactly the same process as were in terms of the DFA. Then there's a we have a concern with the way in which an earth is, for instance, defined, and I know this is detailed, but it's got a huge impact in terms of the City of Tshwane. We have a legacy of and I'm just going to jump to the later part. we have a legacy of developments that took place in terms of all the apartheid legislation, like the Black Communities Development Act proclamation, townships in terms of R293. These developments were all done based on layout plans, okay, and it was never formalized. So the same thing is being created by virtue of the definition of an earth in this piece of legislation, which only deals with something on a plan. It doesn't deal with registered properties. And our local authority is concerned that this thing is going to just be exacerbated because we need to deal with all of these pieces of legislation, which brings us to the next point, that in terms of the repeal of legislation, none of these things were looked at. The Less Formal Township Establishment Act was not looked at. The Black Communities Development Act was not looked at. And there's no guidance in terms of how we're supposed to deal with these things. What are we going to do with them? There's the formalization process of some of these things into freehold, but it doesn't deal with these pieces of legislation. Then the next issue that we have is obviously, as well as Johannesburg, we've got a problem with the fact that there's an appeal process. We do not believe Section 62 in terms of the MSA would work at all, because it's an appeal to the same decision maker, basically. We suggested that the Gauteng Development Planning Act system be used, where there's an intermunicipal local authority appeal tribunal, which we believe is a solution. The engineering services, and I'm almost finished, Mr. Chair, there was a Chapter 7 on infrastructure provision. This was taken out, and there's one clause that replaced that, which is Clause 49, and we believe this is entirely inadequate. We need to deal with infrastructure. This is where delivery happens. This is where local authority can make a difference. So engineering services is a very important aspect, and it needs to be dealt with. We've already dealt with the rationalization of other national legislation and the old apartheid legislation. And then basically, although there are a number of key issues that were not addressed by the bill, we do not believe that they cannot be overcome with proper engagement with local government. We reiterate that we acknowledge the need for new land use legislation, the speed at which it has to be enacted in view of the constitutional judgment. However, this cannot be done at the cost of the operations within the municipality. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much, Swane. I was pleasantly surprised when you said you are the biggest city in the Southern Hemisphere. That's not the only thing that I picked up, though. Who's it to be?
Chair, honourable members and colleagues, thanks for the opportunity for to be able to address this forum. My name is Lihle Phela, the Development Planning Unit within eThekwini. I will summarise the inputs from eThekwini. Chair, just to first acknowledge that we have been making inputs and submissions through a range of processes. That have been initiated through SALGA, through the Cities Network, through the KZN COCTA, as well as additional direct engagements with the National Department of Rural Development and Land Reform. And we are pleased that through those processes, if you look at the current version, most plump, and the initial versions, some of our comments have already been accommodated, and we are pleased. So our focus is only going to be on the latest version of OSPLUM. Now, if you look at Chapter 3, and more specifically, as far as the capacitating process is concerned, we acknowledge that while Section 9 and 10 provide for national and provincial support, respectively, the necessary support and capacity needs to be put in place prior to the implementation of the SPLUMP. If you look at the example of and experiences of the rollout of the KZN Planning and Development Act, for an example, KZN COCTA went to great lengths in, amongst other things, putting in place what will be required for both officials and councillors in the implementation of the KZN PDA. Over and above that, there were workshops for both the municipalities and the private sector, and so on. But despite all that effort, there were still issues, which some of which have necessitated the amendment bill that is currently being considered. So it is our view that the capacitation process needs to be in place before this plan is enacted. Now, if you look at Chapter 5 on the alignment of authorizations, the Act provides for both the separate and created authorizations. In the likely instances of appeals, we foresee problems. For example, a potential conflict exists with NEMA, for example, in the event of an appeal where a joint decision was made. We're asking the question, who would be responsible for hearing that appeal? Will it be the minister or the MEC responsible for that function or other appeal authority? If you look at the National Building Regulations, for example, in an appeal situation where a joint or integrated authorization was made, who will be responsible for hearing the appeal? Will it be the SABS Review Board or any other appeal authority? So we feel that that should be clarified better in SPLAMP going forward. If you look at Part C of Chapter 6, with specific reference to the development charges, whilst the extension of the possibility of raising development charges in respect of active open spaces in the form of sports field, play lots, and the other, whilst that is welcomed, it is also suggested that this arrangement should be extended to passive open space as well. In particular, that passive open space that provides for ecosystem goods and services, without which the municipality would have to make major investments to replace, if even possible. We are sitting with a situation where at the moment, obviously, developable land is increasingly becoming a scarce resource, and we are more and more losing the natural lands that should be ideally reserved for ecosystem goods and services. Now, as far as the appeal process is concerned, just to reiterate some of the issues or submissions already made by my by Tswane and Joburg. Section 51, for example, provides for internal appeals, notwithstanding Section 62 of the MSA. Obviously, it does not appear to exclude Section 62 appeals, although this was a stated intention in our discussions with the National Department of Rural Development and Land Reform. We are of the view that all appeals in relation to planning matters should ideally be considered and dealt with by an independent external appeal authority outside of the municipality. As it has already been said, you can't have the same decision maker determining or ruling on the appeal. It is also desirable that, I've already said that, we prefer that all planning matters be dealt with externally by a single appeal authority. Now, in as far as transitional provisions are concerned, on Chapter 7, an attempt has been made on Section 60 to address this to an extent, but we believe that more is required. Now, besides the constitutional matters that have already been raised by Tswane and Joburg, on a practical level, it is inevitable that certain applications will be caught between the current and the future planning legislation scenarios, which may include high court review processes in many instances. And we believe that an adequate transitional period with a minimum of 2 years is required to ensure that time and effort expended on these processes is not wasted. At a more general level, alignment with the Municipal Systems Act, we propose that close alignment between Chapter 4 of the MSA with particular reference to IDPs and SDFs, as well as PLMB, is required. Ideally, all such requirements should reside in one place, and that is PLMB, we propose. Now, whilst PLMB cannot be a monetary bill in as far as dealing with development charges is concerned, it is also necessary that the Fiscal Powers and Functions Act, number 12 of 2007, be amended to directly provide for the collection of development charges, without which this provision is likely to lead to court cases contesting its application by the different municipalities. Now, there's a need also for SPLMB to formally acknowledge all the downstream plans sitting below the SDF, but before the detailed land use management plans or schemes. Now, it is not always easy to translate the SDF into a land use management system without doing further detailed type planning in between. And depending where you are in the country, these intermediate plans are called in other contexts, special development plans, local area plans or precinct plans, etc. These are also policy plans which form closer interpretations of the SDF while still not assigning specific development rights. So we propose that SPLMB should also acknowledge those so that we begin to bring about more consistency in as far as how we deal with that level of planning. Obviously, the lack of accompanying regulations is a shortcoming which needs to be addressed before the bill is enacted. Thank you, Chair.
I've been advised that this is the point when we have Salga talking to us.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Max. I'm from Sarga National Office. Thank you for the opportunity to come and do some presentation on this plan. Chair, mine is going to be a summary of the issues that have been raised by municipalities. You will pick up that a number of issues that I'm going to raise are not necessarily new issues, but are issues that have been raised by municipalities. And these are issues that we got from municipalities through our consultation process. I'm going to give you a presentation that will cover about 14 key issues. Allow me the liberty to repeat some of the issues that have been raised by the municipalities. First of all, Chair, I would like to sort of commend the department to say this piece of legislation that the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform has come up with, I think is one of those legislations that are trying to actually provide clarity with regards to the relationship between land use management, special planning, and provide some kind of norms and standards that one can actually begin to apply when you are doing the assessment of development applications. And given the plethora of legislation that we have at the moment, I think it's a positive issue that the department has actually come up with a legislation that begins to actually provide a framework and clarity with regards to how those different key issues are actually related or interrelated. Having said that, there are a number of key issues that SARGA and municipalities have been raising with the department, especially given the 2010 Concord ruling with regards to what municipal planning should be or who should be actually be responsible for that particular competence of municipal planning. It is Salga's view that despite the judgment, the Concord judgment of 2010, the bill purports to give provinces powers that, in Salga's view, are actually powers that are supposed to be municipal powers insofar as legislation on municipal planning issues are concerned. If you look at Schedule 1, for example, of the bill, it purports to give provinces powers to legislate on issues that we think should fall under the competence of municipal planning. Thus, in our view, the bill does not give a comprehensive definition on the jurisdiction of municipal planning in line with the Concord ruling of the DFA in 2010. When it comes to the issue of legislation that is being used by municipalities at the moment to actually do planning, it is our view that only three pieces of legislation are being repealed in terms of the bill. There is the Physical Planning Act and the DFA and the Removal of Restriction Act. And municipalities are raising questions, or Salga is raised questions to say, we want to get clarity in terms of how is that the legislation that is currently assigned to provinces like your Lefty and your X70 of 1970 going to be dealt with. We have raised the question to say, these pieces of legislation, they do have an impact on municipal planning, but the bill is not giving clarity in terms of how those pieces of legislation are actually going to be repealed. When it comes to the issue of a spatial development framework, I think Swan has already raised this particular point. Our reading of the bill does not give clarity in terms of, even though there is a desire to actually achieve alignment of SDFs at provincial, regional, and national level, the mechanics of how this is actually going to be achieved is not actually clearly defined in the bill. We also note that although it might appear to be a positive issue, the issue of the introduction of the concept of regional SDFs, again, there is no clarity in terms of how this particular notion, noble as it might appear, is going to be institutionalized or governed. And we believe that the introduction of this particular concept without clarifying the whole issue of how this is going to be institutionalized, it might result in the creation of another layer of planning bureaucracy that might actually even lead to more delays insofar as the assessment of development applications are concerned. We also are of the view that the current description of what should be in an SDF is too prescriptive. And some of our undercapacitated, which are predominantly rural municipalities, might actually find it actually very difficult to actually comply with these requirements of SDFs. And we also of the view that it comes across as if it's over-regulation of the function of the local government. Now, when it comes to the issue of the land use management system, their development, the whole issue around land use schemes and the question of existing property rights, we believe that the transition from the old zoning schemes or old town planning schemes to the new land use schemes that will be required in terms of the bill must afford property owners sufficient time to make use of their existing development rights. And the question of what happens with some of those rights if they're not utilized raises question of saying the bureau must actually provide guidelines in terms of how the issue of claims for compensation that might arise as a result of rights lost must be provided for in the bureau. We acknowledge that whilst it's a noble thing to try and link the SDFs and the land use schemes, we believe the requirement for municipalities to adopt a land use scheme within 5 years after the promulgation of the bill, we think it's not feasible. I'm sure if you look at, for example, Cape Town as an example, they've been running with their process of trying to come up with an IZS, and that process has been running for more than 10 years. So we think the requirement to actually come up with a scheme within 5 years might not necessarily be feasible. Secondly, the issue of the review of the schemes every 5 years, we think it's going to be very costly for municipalities and onerous, and maybe a period longer than 5 years can be considered, given the amount of resources and time that is required to actually do the review of the scheme. Chair, there is another issue that is raised in the bill that talks about when the planning tribunals take a decision on a development application, they might not take the issue of derogation of property as a consideration. As Salga, we are raising the view that in terms of Section 7 of the National Building Regulations, there appears in our own reading to be a conflict between that particular clause and what Section 7 of the NBR requires. And we need actually clarity on how those two sections are actually going to be aligned. Because it's one thing not to consider that when you're assessing a development application, but when it comes to the assessment of the actual building that you want to erect, Section 7 of the National Building Act kicks in and it takes into account the issue of the derogation of property values. Issue of engineering services, Chair, I think both Jobbik and Swan have raised this particular issue, and Etekwini, I'm not going to belabor that particular point. Chair, the issue of municipal planning tribunals, I think this, from Salga's view, is an issue that all municipalities are raising to say we are very concerned with regards to the provision of the bill. We are of the view that Section 79 and 80 of the MSA do provide adequate provisions that allow municipalities to determine the structures that they can set up with regards to who can sit there when it comes to the issue of making planning decisions. We are not sure whether the provisions of the bill is purporting to repeal or amend Section 79 or 80 of the Municipal Structures Act, because in there, municipalities are allowed to set up their own structures in terms of who can sit on that on those particular kind of decision-making bodies. And we are of the view that, given the diversity that we've got in the country, municipalities must be left to actually determine who sits on those particular structures as provided for in terms of Section 79 and 80 of the Municipal Structures Act. When it comes to the issue of the appeals tribunal, it's interesting that the bill, when it comes to the planning tribunal, it makes provisions to exclude councillors from the decision-making process. But when it comes to the appeals tribunal, it allows politicians to actually sit on that particular tribunal. And we are asking the question, what is the rationale of excluding politicians when it comes to the municipal planning tribunals, but bringing them back when it comes to the appeals tribunals? We don't understand the rationale behind that. And Salga's suggestion is maybe an inter-municipal or district tribunal will be a preferred option to make sure that these appeals, they still remain within the ambit of the local government sector, as opposed to drawing in other people that actually fall outside of that particular sector. Having said that, this particular bill, although it proposes an internal municipal appeal system, we are of the view that Section 62 of the Municipal Appeals of the Municipal Systems Act still applies. For example, if you look at the Western Cape, one can appeal in terms of Section 62. Once that process is exhausted, one can appeal in terms of Section 44 of the Land Use Planning Ordinance. And we are saying, in terms of this particular bill, we would not want to see a situation whereby there is a double appeal system, whereby somebody can run an appeal in terms of MSA and then after that run an appeal in terms of the SPLUMA. So we need clarity with regards to what are the implications with regards to that. Chair, one issue that is quite contentious is the issue that is the provision in the bill that allows the MEC or the minister to make decision on development applications if those development applications affect provincial or national interests. We are of the view that without clearly defining what the triggers of the national interest or provincial interests are, this particular provision is likely to create confusion and delays. In certain cases, it leaves room for developers to couch their applications in such a way that it's viewed as a national or it's viewed as an application that affects national or provincial interest in order to avoid some of these appeal mechanisms that are provided in the bill. So we all have the view that there is a strong need to actually define what constitutes national and provincial interest. Maybe another option would be to approach it in the way that NEMA approaches applications, for example, that require environmental authorization. Therefore, we are saying we understand that there are certain cases where applications will have to be dealt with at national or provincial level. But the triggers for those applications, we think they need to be clarified far much more than what is in the bill at the moment. And more importantly as well, we are of the view that the bill does not adequately recognize the fact that even when an application is of a national or provincial interest, the municipality still has to actually input into the decision-making process for such an application. In other words, the bill does not clearly make recognition of the fact that there will be cases where the municipality will have to make a planning decision on a component of an application that is of a national interest. It's not a question of saying once it's of a provincial or national interest, everything gets kicked up to the national or provincial sphere. The municipality still has an obligation to make a decision on that particular application, because at the end of the day, that particular application, it will have a bearing on the municipality. Chair, when it comes to the issue of intergovernmental support and municipal capacity, we have the view that this particular bill is going to bring challenges around municipalities that we're not dealing with the development planning applications that we're relying on provinces. And not all municipalities will have the capacity to implement the provisions of the bill. Having said that, I would want to put it on record, Chair, that SALGA is pleased that the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform is currently busy with an initiative to assess and cost the municipal capacity to implement the SPLAMP, and SALGA is part of that particular process. And we are happy that the department is actually seriously addressing this particular issue. When it comes to the transitional arrangements, I think Swane and Jobbik have raised this particular issue that we have the view that you can't keep on running with the tribunals that were set up in terms of the DFA, which was subsequently declared unconstitutional. We require clarity in terms of our applications that were submitted in terms of the DFA, and were not finalized by the 17th of June, are going to be finalized. So it's an issue that we have raised with the department, and we require clarity with regards to how that issue is going to be finalized. In conclusion, Chair, we have the view that the bill does not meaningfully give effect to the Concord ruling with regards to municipal planning and the provisions that allow the minister to make planning decisions when national and provincial interests are involved. Without clarifying the triggers, we think that those provisions does not assist in this particular process. We also note that even though the bill purports to be framework legislation, there are certain cases where the bill is too prescriptive, and we think it's intruding on the functions of the local government, especially with regards to the prescriptions on who can sit on the tribunal and what the functions of that tribunal will be. We believe the bill needs to strike a balance to provide a framework that will strike a balance between efficient decision making and public consultation, and also, more importantly, eliminate parallel processes, time delays, and multiple appeals processes. There can be little doubt that local government is the key site for delivery and development, and is central to the entire transformation project of the new South Africa. Local government, therefore, as a sector, needs a stable, sound, and equitable policy and legislative framework to deliver on this developmental mandate. In our view, the SPLAM should therefore provide an enabling framework that allows municipalities to address the historical legacies and unequal spatial patterns with appropriate support from national and provincial governments. Chair, that's my submission. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you very much. I'm sure KZN team is very keen on how the discussion is going to take place after tea. I'm talking about KZN Cocktail, I'm not talking about Tekwini Metro, because there are certain areas where they said this is too vague. Municipalities are saying this is too prescriptive. So we'll have to deal with that when we come back. Tea is served. We will have to have tea quicker than normal because we took more than the hour given to us for the presentation. So let's have tea until... Quarter past 10. Thank you.
Welcome, Minister. These professionals here are putting us through a particular good class. And we're happy to enjoy this, especially when professors are
end of the day, just do what you do.
All right. Thank you very much.